it's Canzano. Thanks for making this podcast part of your day. Make sure you subscribe and leave us some feedback. Also, the podcast is brought to you by Multnomah Medical Clinic, dedicated to providing breakthrough, non-invasive, drug-free solutions to ED problems. Call Multnomah Medical Clinic at 503-899-4199 or visit them online at multnomahmedical.com.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to The Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth.
Excited to have our next guest on the show, Matt Prehm, 24/7 Sports, man of the world, barbecue expert. I was at Costco the other day standing in front of this giant meat section, and I was like, I don't know what to do here. I texted Matt Prehm. He set me straight, and he joins us now. How's your day going?
Oh, just got out of school, John. How about you?
You sound like every parent in America at about 1:30 each day. I'm sorry, man.
I was in kindergarten. It was a blast.
Give us one thing that you worked on today in kindergarten.
We worked on counting on how many days of school we have had, which is 12. We worked on what month it is, which is October. The color of the day was blue, and we read a book about blueberries and bears.
Doesn't it seem like it's been more than 12 days of school?
Oh, my gosh. Yes.
I'm not laughing at you. I'm with you, man. We're over here doing it, too. Matt, let's talk about the schedule, first of all. Schedule comes out. I feel like Oregon should have no complaints, right? This is a good schedule for the Ducks.
Yeah, absolutely. They have no complaints at all because the first four teams that they play, John, they all had losing records last year. One of them went to a bowl game. That was Washington State, who has to replace their coaching staff and has key pieces on both sides of the ball gone from that team that went 6-7. And I think Oregon State's going to be improved. But at the same time, you look at the schedule and you look at these teams, and very rarely do you see a team go from a losing record to one in which they are a 10-win team in a normal season, or you know, a team that's competing for a conference championship. Very rarely do you see that, that type of a jump from one, you know, a losing year to the next year. And so, you know, on paper, at least, Oregon looks at a schedule and says, wow, we've got four straight games. The first one's at home. We get the role of Ajira week two, so we have a little bit of film. They're probably not going to be playing at their best like they would be late in the year. And we can work through our own kinks. And so we play the two toughest teams on the schedule, and that's California and Washington. And then you hope that if you get through that unscathed at 6-0, you're playing a Pac-12 South team at 6-0.
Come back to the Ducks in a second, but you hit on something. I think Oregon State's going to be improved as well. And Oregon State will start with Nick Rolovich in Washington State. And the advantage I think Jonathan Smith has is, you know, they just played Hawaii a year ago. He knows what Nick Rolovich wants to do, and these coaching staffs don't like each other. But I do think it's an advantage for Oregon State to get Washington State early. First game for Nick Rolovich, what are they going to look like? Oregon State might just be in an advantageous position there.
Yeah, I think if I was to play Washington State and if I was to play Oregon State too, ideally from a Cougars perspective, if I'm playing them, I want to play them week two. That way you have a little bit of film of what they're going to do, but they're probably not going to be firing all cylinders. If you don't get week two, you want to play week one because that's going to be the first game. I think when we've watched these games that have been played already in college football, the teams that are playing their first and second games they're a little bit sloppy. They're everything's not dialed in yet. And, you know, that's kind of the reasoning of, I guess you could argue, of why you play non-conference games first. But Oregon State's going to have an opportunity where they're familiar with the Hawaii team and the background that Rolovich has, and they're playing them in a game in which, you know, in theory, both teams are – it's their first game. There's going to be mistakes. And looking at you know, Oregon State's roster. I like their roster more than I like Washington State.
Matt Prehm, 24/7 Sports, is with us. Beavers and Ducks, have we settled on what to call this thing, or are we going to call it the game that was previously known as the Civil War, or what's going to happen?
The State of Oregon rivalry game, is that kind of an omen to the Washington Football Club in the D.C. area? I don't know. Haven't heard a name that I've liked. I've caught myself more than once calling it the Civil War. I haven't heard one that really just catches, and I probably, honestly, I don't think we will for a while.
Matt Prehm, 24/7 Sports. Let's talk about Oregon, get back to the Ducks. If you're building a case for Oregon to get to the end of the rainbow, undefeated, in good position to be a playoff team, what things do you think need to happen aside from Oregon being 7-0?
I think this is a year where it goes back to the early BCS type years where style points matter. And in a year in which there's no conference games there's no non-conference games for the Pac-12, for the Big Ten, for the SEC, the few non-conference games that we are getting this season across college football are bye games. They're nothing of importance. They don't have any significant importance in the national landscape for the most part. And so all of those, cross comparisons of, well, the Pac-12 went out and they went 32-7 and their non-conference games this year, they're really strong. Like, or the SEC, playing cream puffs or whatever, like all that stuff is out the window. And so I look at this as, how good do you look? I mean, we've talked a ton the last few years about Clemson playing in the ACC, and they've had no problem getting to the college football playoff in a conference that, quite honestly, I think before this year was worse top to bottom than the Pac-12. It's just Clemson was in a league where they dominated everybody. They made it crystal clear. They were the best team in that conference, and they blew everybody out, and they went undefeated, and they got into the college football playoff. So for Oregon, who cares about the metrics in my mind? I look at this as you need to go 7-0 and you need to blow everybody out. You do that and you look good doing it and you play well every single game and you put up a ton of points. Your defense is stingy and you don't give up a ton of points. You're going to have a really good argument to get yourself into that college football playoff because you're going to go in and say, look, we never lost. And every game we dominated. Who else can say that?
What does Oregon's secondary look like on defense?
I think they're still going to be pretty good. Getting Lenore back is huge because that was the weak point. I think even though Brady Breeze has left and opted out, Javon Holland has opted out and gone pro too, Oregon still had a ton of safeties on this program depth chart that were pretty good. Verone McKinley was a double-digit starter last year as a redshirt freshman at one of the safety spots. Nick Pickett has, I think, like 38 career starts to his name in 3 years at one of the safety spots as well. So it's not like this team isn't going to have experience and talent at the safety spots. Cornerback, you're really thin there from a depth perspective. Talent, I don't think there was a real concern. It was just depth because all of a sudden your third best tight end your third best corner became your top corner and Mykael Wright. Now getting Lenore back, you have a guy that's got 40 career starts at one cornerback position. Mykael Wright, is a guy we know who he is, even though he didn't start a single game last year as a true freshman. He played in 14. He often graded out as the team's best cornerback last year anyways. But now all of a sudden you have DJ James, a sophomore who played in 14 games last year as a true freshman. Jamal Hill is a nickelback that played in 14 games off the bench for Oregon last year as a true freshman. He's also back as a sophomore. And then you add a five-star in Dante Manning. And now for some depth perspective, they've added Jordan Happel from Jesuit High School, who played a couple years at Boise State, has a couple starts under his belt. And most importantly, he went to go play for Andy Avalos at Boise State and kind of knows the basics, the ground floor of Andy Avalos' defense and has the ability to play both boundary and field safety, because that's what he did at Boise State. And so I think you look at this and say, Oregon now has kind of shored up some depth, or maybe not the best defensive backfield in the country. They're probably still the best in the Pac-12.
The quarterback position replacing Justin Herbert, number six pick in the draft. I keep thinking about this quarterback position and an offense that's adding Joe Moorhead, a new coordinator. How dicey does that feel to you?
It's scary because you have an entirely new offensive line up front too. I would argue that the loss of Penei Sewell is going to be harder to replace than Justin Herbert. And that's not to, to discredit anything that Herbert did. You looked at before Sewell's departure and opt out, you looked at this offensive line and said, yeah, they got to replace, you know, four starters and they have a new quarterback, but everything is so much easier when you have the best offensive lineman in the country. And now you don't have that luxury. So you have five new offensive linemen and you have a new quarterback also starting. I also wonder what kind of schematic things can Joe Moorhead do that Marcus Arroyo as the offensive coordinator the last few years didn't do with this team? How does the evolution of the receiving core change what they can do schematically as well, which could maybe make things a little bit easier on whoever is the quarterback? I think it's going to be Tyler Shuck. I think Tyler Shuck's going to be a good player at Oregon. I think he'll make some mistakes, but for the most part, he'll be one of the better Pac-12 quarterbacks this season. But I watch Justin Herbert in the NFL and see what types of throws he's making and the attacking that the Chargers are doing with the receiving core that they have, and think, boy, did we not see Justin Herbert's full arsenal at Oregon? Because maybe it's because of personnel, maybe it's because of scheme, maybe it's because of just Mario Cristobal overriding what Arroyo wanted, or maybe Arroyo did do it, but we did not see the full arsenal of Justin Herbert at Oregon. And so I look at Moorhead and think, what can you do schematically that's drastically different than what Oregon's done the last few years to compensate for the newness on the offense?
There's the pre-Thanksgiving schedule and the post-Thanksgiving schedule in the Pac-12. Three games before, three games after. It's Stanford at home for Oregon, at Washington State in week two, home against Chip Kelly and UCLA in week three. Of those three games, which one is a bigger trap?
Washington State. The Cougars had, you know, before last year, had won four in a row. And last year's win over the Cougars was a field goal at the last second of the game to win it. So, you know, Oregon hasn't had a blowout scenario against Washington State no matter what. And I think Oregon's better than Washington State. I feel like they have a better talent roster makeup than what Washington State has. But for whatever reason, the Cougars always play the Ducks hard. It's always a difficult game, especially in Pullman. And typically we're talking, oh, wow, you want to avoid, you know, Pullman. You want to play Washington State early in the year before it gets really cold. Well, you're playing Washington State early in the football year of 2020, but it's still going to be middle of November when you go there. And I checked when the schedule came out. I was like, what's the temps like in Pullman in mid-November? And it's low 40s, high 30s. And if that game's at night, it's going to get even colder than that, I bet. Oregon's lucky they're not going there in December. I don't want to play in Pullman in December when it's snowing, but November it could still be snowing. And now you throw in the newness of Rolovich and the history that team has always played Oregon tough. And the last few times the Ducks have gone to Washington State, it's been difficult for them to do anything productive on the football field. That's the game I circle as, if there's a trap game on this schedule, it's got to be Washington State.
Matt Prehm, 24/7 Sports, is with us. The post-Thanksgiving games, Oregon State at Oregon State for what used to be the Civil War. Oregon plays at Cal, and then Washington travels to Autzen Stadium. I want to focus on those last two. Oregon at Cal. Cal's the sweetheart pick from a lot of people in this conference. And Washington has got Jimmy Lake. It's not exactly a brand-new coach, but he's a new head coach. Those last two games, how significant are they? Which is the game that you worry more about if you're a Duck fan?
I worry about Cal. If I'm a Duck fan, more than I worry about Washington, because the Huskies, their offense was not good last year. They lost a ton of pieces from that, you know, their better players from that bad offense last year. Their offensive coordinator hire was, I think, certainly an eyebrow raiser of that's who you went out and got. Cal, on the other hand, always plays really good defense. Wilcox, I think, is maybe the most underrated coach in the Pac-12 with what he has from a program standpoint, from a facility standpoint, what he has to do from an admissions standpoint. Doesn't have the brand that Stanford has from a football perspective, and yet they continue to win, and they have a lot of their offensive guys back. They're going to be good. They're going to be dialed in at the late part of the year. It's a road game as well for Oregon. So I look at that Cal game and think that could be a real difficult game. And in my eyes, it's for the division championship. I have Oregon 1, and I have Cal 2 in my vote that I gave to the league this morning. So I think that's going to be a big game.
Matt, it's a weird year. You've got Kevin Sumlin at Arizona, who's now positive for COVID-19. People in Colorado are wondering, will they be able to practice? How confident are you that we're going to get these games in?
Eugene, it seems like every single day we get a new update from the Lane County Health Authority that there's like 40 to 50 new cases of COVID-19. Hospitalizations are going up every day, it feels like. Hasn't been a huge spike in deaths, which is thankful. Unfortunately, there have been some people that have died the last couple of days because of it here. I worry. I mean, it's certainly, look, this is a razor thin margin, you know, of error for not only Oregon, but for everybody in the conference. 7 games in 7 weeks. You hope daily testing gets kind of catches anything that could pop up, so we don't see, spreading within a team or within multiple teams. It's crazy. I mean, I hope we get through this and we can play 7 games, but I also have a little of me that thinks, you know what, like every other league has dealt with something, and what will the Pac-12 be and how will they handle it? I look at from a pro perspective, something I just never even considered was the NFL had the Vikings and the Titans had an outbreak, and a bus driver in Minneapolis drove the Tennessee team to and from the stadium, to the hotel, and to the airport. And that same bus driver also drove the Houston Astros baseball team to the stadium, to the hotel, to the airport when they were playing the Twins in the playoffs. I mean, there are people that are going to be intersecting, you know, teams, because a lot of schools use the same services, and you know, whether it's travel or whether it's hotel accommodations, what have you, and it's going to be, it's going to be tough. And I hope we get through it, but I have a little bit of, fear of, every league has gone through something. How will the Pac-12 respond to those?
Help me out with this, because my wife thinks I'm nuts, and I say, look, these teams are locked down. It's like 10 weeks. Can they keep the players from hanging out, going to parties? Can they keep them in a bubble for 3 or 4 weeks and then 7 weeks of the season? And she laughs at me and she says, look, the NFL players can't do it. What makes you think college kids can do it? Do you think the players, because you've talked to these kids over the years, do you think that they will focus, bear down, and avoid doing things that are foolish?
I think for the most part, you will get that. The most important days or weeks will be, I think, week 3, week 4, week 5 of the season, because once the season gets going, everyone's going to be dialed in. They're going to listen, follow protocol, you can't mess up. But then after a couple weeks of nothing bad has happened, we're still playing games, I'm going to go out to that one party, or I'm going to go over to that person's house. And that's, in week 4, week 5, that's where it gets dicey. That's where I get my concerns. I also wonder, look, how much you can drill in your athletes and have them be 100% bought in, where when they're in the facility, they're doing everything that's needed. When they're not at a facility, they go home, they stay home. But what happens if, 4 players on a football team live with two other just regular students that they're friends with. Those two friends aren't being told the same expectations, aren't being told, don't have the, you know, the monitoring and the constant reminder to socially distance and don't do things that you shouldn't be doing. And what happens if one of them goes and does something bad or goes to a party that they shouldn't be at? They come back, they're around, you know, one of the players, and then they pick up four guys, you know, and get in the car to go to football practice, which happens every single practice. If you've covered the team, they show up early in the morning. The players usually carpool themselves over. So you'll often see guys, you know, four or five guys get out of a car because they, you know, they live together or they live near each other, and they, you know, one of those guys has a car and he drives them to and from the facility to home. And now all of a sudden you've got four guys who've done everything right, but they were around someone who wasn't doing everything that they should be doing, and now they potentially have it. So I was young, John. You were young. I was told not to do something, and there was always part of me that said, well, maybe how can I figure out to do this and get away with it?
Yeah, and I think you're going to have most of the players locked down. Hopefully the rapid results testing will isolate anybody who doesn't stay safe. But again, we're watching problems in other leagues, and I'm crossing my fingers that we don't have problems in the Pac-12. Matt Prehm, you're a superstar. I appreciate what you do. Good luck with kindergarten tomorrow. I think the color tomorrow will be green.
Oh, it's blue for the whole week, John, so I'm looking forward to seeing what else we can learn about blue.
Blue! There you go. Blue's Clues. All right. Appreciate you, Matt.
Thanks.
There it is. Go have a drink. Parents out there. I saw something where he said alcohol consumption of people over the age of 30 has risen like 30% since the pandemic. And I was like, only 30%? Just wait till they get the homeschooling figures. Parents out there that are busy working with their kids, I love you for it. I know in our household, my wife does it in the mornings. And I will pass by the room that they're working in. And she is pouring herself and her effort into our first grader. And I appreciate her for that. And I give a shout out today to all the parents like Matt Prehm that are doing that work. And grandparents, a lot of grandparents out there picking up that slack. Aunts and uncles as well. I appreciate you all. Leave it here. You got the bald-faced truth. Kyle Whittingham will be on Thursday's show, Utah football coach, Thursday. There you go. 7 good minutes. For those of you who don't know, Kyle Whittingham's people at Utah said, hey, Kyle, coach wants to be on your show, but he has to limit it to 7 minutes. And I said, 7 minutes? We've had him on the show 10 minutes, 15 minutes. I usually just... In the interview, Judah Newby can attest to this. I end the interview when I'm done with the interview. Like, I'm not looking at the clock during the interview. That he wants me to look at the clock. It's clock management. I got to get out of bounds after my questions. You know, coach, how you feeling about the season? Time out me. Does the clock run if I call time out? How about I do that on Kyle Whittingham?
No 10-second runoffs here, hopefully.
So I'm going to have Kyle Whittingham... And I guarantee you that it's going to be much more than 7 minutes. My prediction, over, under 9 minutes. What do you take?
What you got
going over.
Yeah, but you've got to say, is it from your first question? Is it from his first answer?
From when he picks up the phone, we start the clock.
And oh, then I, okay.
Like, from that to when he hangs up the phone. I'm going to say... 9 minutes. I would like to do somewhere around 10 to 12 minutes. That's where I'm comfortable. But we'll see. We're going to talk about Eddie Van Halen coming up. Legendary guitarist, co-founder of Van Halen, has passed away, died after a battle with throat cancer. That, sports, and Anna will join the show.
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Baltimore.
Hey, sorry to interrupt the podcast, but...
If you want to listen to more of the Bald Faced Truth Radio Show, including more of this segment that you're listening to, make sure you subscribe on SoundCloud and iTunes to the Bald Faced Truth Radio Show. Thanks for listening.